Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the California Coastal Commission and ask Ms. Miller to call the roll, please.
Commissioner April.
Present.
Commissioner Wickett.
Present.
Commissioner Brennan.
Present.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Here.
Commissioner McClure.
Here.
Commissioner Resnick.
Here.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Here.
Chair Schellenberger.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. And now changes to the agenda.
Present.
We're first going to report out of closed session, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Reporting out of closed session in the matter of Bayona Wetlands Land Trust versus California Coastal Commission. The Commission received litigation information in the matter of Collegian versus California Coastal Commission, and in the matter of McCarthy versus California Coastal Commission, the Commission received litigation information in two potential litigation matters, the Commission received litigation information and gave advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
First up, for the audience, if you wish to speak on an item on today's agenda, please fill out a speaker slips, and those are located just outside of the meeting tent here. And if you have a cell phone or wireless device, please turn it off as they interrupt our proceedings here. The only change we have today on the agenda is we want to trail the strategic plan item, that's item 9A, and move up item 9B, the report on local government workshop. So just flip those. And that concludes today's changes for today's agenda.
Okay, thank you. We have a few public speaker slips, which I will take now. Reeve Wolpert, then Mark, I'm going to get this name before I leave. Chitillo, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Reeve Wolpert. I'm just here to thank you one more time, that's all. It's been a great 3 days, and I, if you recall, on Wednesday, I shared with you my story about the two arroyos. But right now, I wanted to momentarily relive a couple of memories. One of those, or both of them, are from yesterday on our field trip. I was standing next to Chair Schellenberger when Yana saw the dolphins out in the water. And I wanted to tell you so much about my experiences with dolphins. That those were pretty far off, but I've seen them very close up along Gaviota, and it is wonderful, really, truly wonderful. And I noticed you didn't take your eyes off the horizon for the rest of the time until you got back to the bus. And also, when we were at Paraíso del Mar, that was pretty trippy when that train came under that bridge. We probably should not have been up there at that time. And I wanted to let you know, I was probably the first one to hear that train coming. I've walked the tracks around on Gaviota and San Luis Obispo since the 50s, ridden many freight trains, in fact, rode a couple of freight trains on the top of a boxcar one time around Point Conception. I also paddled my 5'3 surfboard around Point Conception, not much bigger than a big fat seal, which was very dangerous to do back in the 70s. But I've had lots of experiences up there, and I'm appreciative that I did have those when I did, and I don't think that the future is going to hold much opportunity for people to have the experiences that I had. I think it's just going to get too crowded, and that's what my story was about on Wednesday. And the last thing I wanted to say is if any of you want to walk down Arroyo 1, Yana, I'll take you. Okay. It's a different experience than what we saw yesterday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll bring Commissioner Bochco, who had to miss this meeting.
All right. Mark? And you have Bill Kerstetter here, who's ceding his time to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Mark Chitillo. And yesterday, after the Bacara hearing, I thought it was very impressive, the CDO that your board, your commission adopted, and I thought that was helpful in terms of promoting voluntary compliance, but it created, I realized as I was going home, some big questions as a result, here we go, of that hearing. And the big question that I think we all had is, why did the lizard cross the commission? It was a great moment. It's a little hard to see the lizard down there, but you guys did see him yesterday. And I'm not sure if he actually approached the podium and addressed the commission or not. I had to leave, but it was a great moment.
He did, just to answer your question.
We have his car here.
Not yet. I did actually want to also address a more serious matter. One of the issues that I've been working on is protecting visual resources in Carpinteria. And I wanted to introduce to the commission a project that we're currently working on concerning a series of power lines in the Carpinteria Valley area, and in particular power lines that have been proposed and are located directly in front of a residential area out in front of in the Shepherd Mesa area. I think because of the commission's jurisdiction over these kinds of facilities, this is potentially of statewide significance, and so it's important that this be kind of kept in context. We recognize the need, of course, to maintain electrical infrastructure, but what Southern California Edison has been doing in this case has been routinely expanding the size of the infrastructure that they install under the auspices of a routine maintenance activity. What we've experienced here is a gradual increase in the level of visual impact without any real consideration of the significance of that. These are a series of photographs reflecting the metal poles that have been replacing wooden poles in this area and along Highway 192. This all is in the coastal zone in Carpinteria. The coastal zone goes quite inland. It's a little bit unusual, but this is all subject to your jurisdiction. Previously, the county did not attempt to regulate these sorts of facilities, and the commission did not exert its jurisdiction. However, back in 2005, the commission did express its regulatory jurisdiction over these projects, insisted that the county conduct CDP processes. Much of the work that we've seen done actually began in 1999 with no permits whatsoever, and it wasn't until 2005 that we were able to actually get jurisdiction over these projects. This project here is SCE's. They're calling it the Reliability Project. It goes all the way on the right side of the slide into Ventura County. The county line is over on the left side, and that's where the coastal zone goes quite inland and includes the lower portion of this this project. Here's my last slide shows the lower section. It's actually a green line, is one that they built. The county line is right where the green line makes a little zig in the lower right-hand corner there. They constructed this project back in between 1999 and 2004 with no jurisdiction whatsoever, no permit review, claimed that it was exempt. They more than doubled the thickness of the wires. They more than, they substantially increased both the height and the width of these poles. I'm just going to go back to the original pictures here. You can see that the wire itself is of a different color. It's substantially more impactful to the view shed. The California Public Utilities Commission has taken jurisdiction of the transmission lines under their authority for transmissions lines. This project also includes a series of distribution lines that are below it, and that is the subject of the county's jurisdiction. We actually have a hearing next Monday before the zoning administrator where they're going to consider a CDP for an emergency permit that was issued more than 14 months ago. And when we've asked for the basis of these emergencies and asked for evidence of it, when there's been independent evaluation, the SCE has claimed that woodpecker damage has necessitated the replacement of these poles. When we asked for an independent evaluation of that, it turns out that there was no structural damage to these poles, and they had to rescind some of the prior emergency permits that had been requested. So there's a fair amount of mischief that's going on with respect to these transmission and distribution facilities. It is in this area within the commission's jurisdiction. I wanted to bring it to your attention. We're going to be working hard to try and get the county to do the right thing and the Public Utilities Commission, but we'd like to certainly engage, have staff involved in this project as they have been in the past, and encourage their involvement so that we can ensure that coastal resources are given their full measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Yeah, may I just add a footnote to that one? Area that Mr. Shatillo is talking about, and actually Mr. Kerstetter was, I think, one of my last clients before I retired on that very Shepherd Mesa project. And the added concern that I have, and that was highlighted again yesterday as we did our field trip along the Gaviota Coast, is that we seem to have now resolved that these things are not exempt from CDP. The county has recognized that. But then in the case in Shepherd Mesa, even though there's a policy for undergrounding in the existing LCP, the standards appear to be either too loose or the county didn't seek additional or sufficient evidence, because the policy reads that I believe that these lines should be undergrounded unless it's infeasible to do so. And my sense is that that really hasn't been pursued, and my concern is that as these power companies seek additional facilities along the coast, especially Gaviota, that we're going to be seeing increased size poles rather than taking seriously the existing policy to underground them. So I appreciate Mr. Kerstetter's presence and Mr. Shatillo's work on this case, and wanted to underscore my concern. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go back to the South Coast.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First up, we have the consent items for the Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District. And staff is not aware of any opposition to those three items, and we ask that the commission vote and approve the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes on the consent calendar? Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Kinsey. Any unwillingness for unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, we unanimously approve the consent calendar.
Next item is item number 6, and this is a Deputy Director's report for the Los Angeles County portion of the South Coast District. And these are the waivers and immaterial amendments and immaterial extensions, and we ask for your concurrence on the Executive Director's determination.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we concur.
So that brings us, that concludes the items for the South Coast District, and that brings us to strategic plan.
Actually, it brings us to 9B.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was confused.
You knew that.
Well,
I did, yes, thank you.
And even more actually, under my continued ED report, I wanted to have Susan Hench do a brief budget update, which you should have had handed out the other day. That's item F9 that was handed out on Wednesday, I believe.
Yes, in the focus being on the brief element, we did pass out this report. I have extra copies if you don't have it. So if you don't have it with you, I'm going to give...
No, we have it.
Okay, but if any of you don't have it, it would be helpful to have it.
This is item 9, Executive Director's Report.
So what I'd like to do today is just walk you through this report, and it's one that I ask you to keep because it has some important numbers that you can't read very well on the screen. And what we've done here is highlighted the current budget, the governor's budget, which is an attachment, and then there's attachment 2, which is this document, this page, which gives a summary of the commission's budget from the very beginning of time, since the commission started. So I think that's the easiest way to look at what's happened and where we are. If you look at the governor's budget, those of you who have experience with the governor's budget, it's a complex document, and I'm happy to answer any questions or go through any numbers that you have questions about. But it's a moment in time, and the governor's budget, I'll show you that. That's this page. It says GB on the top. It's the third page back. It says FY 13-14 proposed GB attachment 1. That's the governor's budget that was issued in January. This is the document that is currently at the legislature for consideration. If you look at the governor's budget, there are three elements, three columns. 11-12, which is the past year. So those numbers are actual. That's what we actually spent. Those are the positions we actually had. So 127.9, though we were authorized to fill more positions, those are the positions that we actually did fill. By the end of the year, that's what we had. So if you look at all the 11-12, those are actual. And when you look at the other document that I gave you that is the summary of all the past history, all those numbers, all those years up to this, through this last year, are actual. So the current year that we're in, fiscal year 12-13, that's the year we're in progress. And that the budget, fiscal year budget, ends in June. So when you see 12-13, this is the numbers that we had as of December, before the budget was printed in January. The 13-14 numbers all through this budget are the numbers that are being considered in the legislature at this point. And the important thing is to understand the commission gets money from several sources: the general fund, the CBCEA account, or our whale tail account, when you look at funding in the governor's budget, the State Coastal Conservancy Fund. We received money from the VRA account, $1,136,000, to do the commission's database upgrade. That money will be completely spent by the end of this June, when the project is completed, and we will not be getting money from that fund again unless there's a special appropriation by the legislature. Federal Trust Fund are the funds that we get from the federal government in federal grants. Reimbursements are contracts. We have a contract with Caltrans, which is that comes under the reimbursements. We do some work for Bay Conservation and Development Commission. The money is in that account. And reimbursements and the Federal Trust Fund, an important thing to remember, those, the numbers in here are allocations or authorizations that we can spend. It doesn't necessarily mean we will spend or we have that much money. It says that you can spend up to that number. The general fund is the only one where you actually have that amount of money to spend. The Coastal Act Services Fund is the commission's devoted fund that is from filing fees. The commission gets the filing fees. That amount of money can only be spent if it's allocated by the legislature. And our current year allocation is $665,000. So I'll answer any of the detailed questions that you might have about that. The important thing to know now is we're in the middle of the budget hearings. We have our Senate hearing on April 25th, and our Assembly hearing is supposed to be or tentatively scheduled for May 1st. During those budget subcommittee hearings, we testify, answer any questions the members have. They have the ability to add, change, what makes some adjustments to the governor's budget. The subcommittees pass their version of the budget, pass it on to the full committees, and then the legislature will adopt the budget. There's the deadline for the legislature to do that is June 15th. The whole budget then goes to the governor, and the governor can make line adjustments to the budget. And because of the change in the law, it's now a majority vote, so we're expecting an on-time budget at the end of June, and the new fiscal year starts July 1st. I wanted to see if you had any specific questions.
Questions? Commissioner Mitchell.
The reimbursements... there's an increase. Besides Caltrans, what reimbursements? What is in that budget? Because it's $2 million.
Reimbursements are the Caltrans. We have money from the Department of Fish and Game for the oil spill program. We have a contract with Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, a small contract with them. And there are several companies, oil companies, Southern California Edison, that gives a small amount of money to expedite permits. That's in that allocation. So anything that is not the general fund or not federal funds essentially goes in that okay. section. And that, again, is an authorization to spend up to that amount. And if we get additional money, we need to report it to Department of Finance. And those changes in the middle of the year are called budget revisions. So sometimes you have to make changes in the middle of the year.
Right. So Edison gives us money for expediting permits?
They have given us money, $150,000, yes.
And is there anyone, they're not an oil company, they're in.
No, they're a public utility.
Right. Who else gives, besides, there are oil companies, you said?
Yes, I think this year it's Chevron. I'd have to look up the actual list. It's small amounts of money.
What is small amounts?
$75,000. It's the Chevron.
And that's for expediting their permits?
That particular one, for the Chevron one, it is they have an ongoing issue at the Guadalupe Dunes, and it was an agreement a long time ago as a permit condition to offset some of our staffing costs.
Right. And so, you know, we've had this conversation multiple times about doing permit expediting fees for people so that we can bring on more staff, et cetera. So this is already actually happening with Edison and Chevron and others. But we've never talked about that. That's why I was curious about this line item. I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing about this, but we've talked about this as a way to augment our budget and having, different governmental entities, et cetera, give money to the budget, to our budget, so that we can bring on additional staff. And the concern or the pushback I've always received is that, you know, we don't want, is that Commissioner McClure's issue of rural communities getting poor applicants getting pushed to the back of the line. So it seems like we already have a policy in place in order to actually bring on staff to expedite permits. So why isn't this more broadly, besides Chevron and investor-owned utilities? Because I think I applaud it. I think it's wonderful because, we staffing restraints and budget restraints are such a big issue. Why isn't this, why is it only available to IOUs and oil companies, et cetera?
We did a budget change proposal numerous years ago that described to the Department of Finance that there would be, these are projects that have big ongoing staff demands, not one particular project. So it's, we described that to the Department of Finance, put it in as up to a certain amount of money that we would be getting from those sources, and the sources could change. So we can do it when it makes sense to do it. If it's one small project, you can't really bring the staffing on to do it.
Well, yes, but I think the issue is that if this is available to, Port of San Diego, for example, who has...
We are working with the Port of San Diego.
And for charging them additional fees to expedite or review their projects?
They are looking at a 1PY, one person, and we're working on a draft agreement with them to set aside a person for a year or 2 years. We also had an agreement with Pebble Beach where they provided funding for a two-year period to give us staffing. And that was just described to the commission in the past.
Okay. Well, again, when I brought this up, or this has been a conversation that we've had, I've been told, my understanding is that it's not possible to do. So I think it's great that it is. I'm just curious as to how the decisions are made that, when that works and when it doesn't.
Maybe I could just add a little bit, because I agree that we should be using any tools we have to increase these kinds of opportunities. But I think what Susan is saying is that there's a line between the small case that comes and goes, which is very difficult to do this kind of thing for, as opposed to working with the Port of San Diego, where we are trying to set that up because we have a steady stream of work for them. And that's the same model that we have with Caltrans. The Caltrans contract was done, I don't know, 10 years ago or more, in order to specifically facilitate the large workload we have with Caltrans. So in some cases where you can identify a longer-term workload and set up a contract that makes sense that allows us to bring staff in and the startup costs, we are trying to do that. I am also interested in, and we can talk about that more under the strategic plan if you want, in looking at ways to expand the pool of opportunities by pooling funding. But that, you know, needs to be thought through as to how you do address some of other concerns about equity and fairness in processing and who goes first. And, for example, with local government, it's most clear to me that we may be able to build a relationship with local governments where there's a funding stream supported by local governments generically to support LCP work, but we need to think through how that would actually be acquired and then allocated in a fair way, as opposed to specifically identified to a set of work for a particular local government, which is also an option. So I think we're going to look to all opportunities, keeping in mind that balance between fairness and effectiveness.
Can I just for clarity, these are not fees. They are funds that come in agreement. It's not a fee imposed on anybody.
No, it's not a fee in any way, shape, or form. It is a choice that, like the port would choose to give that kind of money to offset. And then what we're trying to do then is you hire a limited term person to backfill the permanent person that is doing the work for that period of time. And with Pebble Beach, we had a 2-year commitment with them. We have an agreement that it doesn't in any way, shape, or form change any of the way we do work. The staff is still completely independent. It essentially allows us to devote a person's time to expedite that project and focus on that project. That's what they're doing for that period of time.
Any other questions for the Commissioner Wickett?
And I just assume the funding is in lieu of fees, though, correct?
No, it's totally separate.
It's separate, and then they also pay additional.
All the filing fees that are required.
Thank you.
Everything is the same. This is just to focus that staffing.
Yeah, just just to close, it's just I'm fascinated, having been on this commission for 2.5 years, and having had this conversation several times to hear this, I just didn't know that that was the case. So,
Commissioner April.
Yeah, I just want to reinforce that we've been doing this for several years with the Coast Commission. Has been very successful, and in no way is it basically buying our permits. It's more of education experience for our department, and also to have dedicated staff with our huge workload. And you'll be seeing our I-5 project in March or so, and that's been several years in the making, but it really helps us focus on the Coastal Act and how to address it. So we support the opportunity to do this.
Thank you. And thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Susan. You are one of the rare people who can make the governor's budget at least semi-understandable, so... Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Maybe she can explain it to him.
Turn your mic off.
Woo. 18 seconds.
You didn't want to hear it.
No, it's fine.
He's busy. That is an at-will position.
Stop. Just stop.
So that brings us to...
Thank you.
9B, which we moved up ahead of 9A. I don't know if that's... something's burning.
No, stop. Okay.
So I wanted to just reverse the order on A and B because B is a subset of... A, I think, and wanted to talk briefly about that and see if there are any questions. 9B is the report on the local government workshop that we did in December about improving the LCP planning process. And at that time, we indicated we would come back with a follow-up report summarizing what we think occurred in the workshop in December with local government and what our next steps were. We have been coordinating with our local government working group and discussed the outlines of this report with representatives of the working group, including CSAC and League of Cities. And basically, the report summarizes the discussion we had, some of the issues that were talked about, the public comments that we had, the various issues that were identified by all of you sitting around the table in that workshop. And then the core of it is a summary of where we think we are right now and what we think we can do moving forward. And there are six bullet points in the executive summary, and they're also discussed in a little more detail later on, summarizing where we are. And you know, I think in many respects we're saying what we've been saying, which is we've made a lot of progress, we think, with reorienting how we're prioritizing our staff time and trying to bring the LCP planning process forward a little bit to make it more collaborative and coordinated and reduce conflict earlier. Along those lines, the six things that we've identified here include discussing improving the process with the representatives and the best ways to do that communication, including whether to continue our quarterly meetings that we've had or to continue having a regular workshop maybe every 2 years, and also other avenues. So, for example, I've accepted an invitation to speak to CSAC at the end of May in their Sacramento meeting, which is something I've been doing regularly, but that would be another opportunity to touch base on whatever is pending and current issues. That's something we can definitely continue to do. The second bullet talks about following up on what we talked and had provided to the workshop participants, which was this best practices for working with LCP amendments and trying to implement those best practices to the extent our resources allow. And I think we have pretty broad concurrence on those practices and the issues with various parts of the process that we've talked about in terms of doing that. I did want to really underline at this time that I think we are, and this is bleeds into the strategic plan discussion a little bit, really at our limit in terms of what we can accomplish unless we have additional resources. So we've opened up this door for more collaboration, more upfront meetings, coordination meetings, including this idea of generic quarterly, for example, coordination meetings to discuss matters of priority for various local governments. And the response has been really positive. I think Jack can underscore that. But the result is we have many more local governments now calling, saying, you know, when can we have our meeting? And when can we meet about this? And it's really put a severe strain on our capacity to do all of those meetings and continue the regular work that we have to do for permits and appeals and LCP amendments. So I just want to put that on your radar that I think we're being successful, but it is, I'm hearing it, we're, you know, straining our existing capacity to keep doing that. So we're going to keep working with our local government partners to make sure that we've really looked at what the priorities are and that they understand that we need to work together to most effectively focus the limited resources we do have. But I'm concerned about our ability to maintain that as well as continue to do what we've been doing and bring you the level of service that you expect. The third bullet is to look to additional communication tools that might facilitate quicker transmission of what we are doing as at the commission to local government and local planning staff. For example, an e-newsletter or some regular communication to local planning directors and decision makers about what's happening here so that we can make that policy feedback loop a little more real, live time. The fourth bullet is to complete the update of our online LUP guidance. And I think people often don't realize that we do have online policy guidance for local governments to address LCP updates. It can always be enhanced, and we're continuing to work on ways to do that. We are in the process of updating those sections. If you go to our website and see resources for local governments, you'll find those resources linked there by issue groups, and those are the things that we're currently updating, and we'll continue to do that. The fifth bullet was to investigate and, in coordination with local governments and other stakeholders, look for strategies to increase the funding for the LCP program, some of which we just talked about, but we're also in the midst of that now in our budget process. And in the hearing coming up, we've been asked to talk about our LCP program in a little more detail, and I was talking earlier this week with representatives from Santa Barbara County, for example, and have been working with Kathy Long in Ventura County about ways that we can work together to support our mutual interest in increased funding for LCP planning. And again, I think there is a pretty broad support for that concept, recognizing that one way to frame this increased capacity is that it would result in streamlining and more effective LCP planning, so which is good for all of us. And finally, to organize and conduct workshops related to policy and planning, for example, sea level rise, which is anticipated. This report is a little out of date, but anticipated later this year, probably June. And then the agricultural resources is another example, the workshop we're going to have next month. So those are the six things that we've identified that we think we are pretty comfortable committing to moving forward with local government on, building on what we discussed, recognizing again that I do think we are, at our capacity and bumping up against those limits. So if you have any questions about that, I'm happy to answer those.
Questions, Commissioner McClure?
It seems to me that we should be able to figure out a way to communicate more effectively with local electeds or local jurisdictions with kind of like a mass mailing, so to speak. But to, for instance, 2 days ago we did the Santa Barbara update with the LCP where they had some very innovative ideas. And to me, if we could somehow put that on the web and get that or in an email form or something to the community development departments, that would actually go, oh my gosh, look at what they're doing in Santa Barbara. This is something we can do. Because I think that when we take those kind of progressive strides forward, if we were able to inform local jurisdictions, they would get on the bandwagon and say, wow, we could do a very similar thing. But because of the disconnect of distance, the disconnect of priority, they may not see that in their frontal lobe. And so I would think that we could maybe come up with an idea of somehow getting the information out to them of, here's what we just did. You guys could do the same thing. Because when the Santa Barbara thing, I mean, I'm thinking, gosh, if every jurisdiction did that, we would have saved a whole bunch of time in our LCPs. Because I thought that was a very remarkable thing they did. But I don't know how to get the word out. And so I don't know. Somehow we need to connect to the web and just give a blast out. Because I think that my community development people, if all of a sudden that came on their webpage, they would go, whoa, maybe we could do something similar. And it may energize them to update their LCPs.
Commissioner?
I was just saying, that is the kind of thing we're looking at trying to improve upon, and we do have the updates on the web that we put there, but we don't necessarily do that a real-time pushing it out. I would comment, and this is also more of a strategic plan discussion, that kind of policy synthesis and integration and communication is something that I'm really interested in enhancing, but that takes staff time. It's not easily done to pull information together, particularly statewide, and then put it back out in a form that is appropriate and respects what the commission has done in a particular case or planning action or permit, but also touches all the policy questions in the right way that isn't going to trip you up in the future. So ideally we would have a in larger statewide planning unit. That's something that's summarized in the strategic plan report. Is back in the early 80s, we had 14 people in San Francisco in a statewide planning unit that did that kind of policy work and gave us the capacity to do that. I'm interested in trying to build that back.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that local governments, city and counties, they acknowledge that every month the Coastal Commission has a meeting. They understand that. Other than that, they pay absolutely very little attention. And it's not because they don't care. It's because they also are at their resource end. But somehow, if we can highlight the great work that we do, because we make great strides going forward on different policies and different LCPs, that if they just could grab a piece of it and start working on it, the next time they're at their regional office talking to their regional staff, it would be like, oh my gosh, we're going to incorporate that. But somehow we have all the work that happens here is disconnected to the local entities. And so I don't know if it's just a mass email on, you know, pay attention, we just adopted something in Santa Barbara and everybody should get on board and read it, or I don't know what would trigger that, but it seems it wouldn't be very major to trigger it, but that's my goal.
Commissioner Kinsey.
Thank you. I'm going to agree with Commissioner McClure, and I think that it is reflected in the strategic plan, and it's one of these big gaps in resources, and it's going to lead me, when we get there, to say we need to start figuring out how to get more partners to achieve the list, because there's an awful lot of dollar signs on a lot of the things that we've identified as strategically important, and that's a huge one in terms of being able to get both our successes out, but also guidance out to make these processes work better. But what I would say to this agenda item is that I think this is a very positive reflection of the engagement that we have now with local cities and counties, and I appreciate Dr. Lester getting to those meetings of League of Cities, Coastal Counties, because we want to stay in touch while we are there. We're in a education and trust building phase right now. There's the skepticism is on the downside and the hope is on the upside, but we're going to have to follow through. And so working on getting a few wins on the LCP process that we can point to is good. Staying in touch while we're working on that will be really important. And I think this workshop paid off for us in terms of the willingness to give us some breathing room on the part of the local governments that I've talked to. Thank you.
Commissioner Groom.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure said it, but the conundrum is that we used to have perhaps 20 planners in the largest city in San Mateo County, and there's now 7. And so they're experiencing the very same troubles that we're experiencing here. And so what I've been trying to figure out in my own mind is how I can communicate better with our local government, which then I put a burden on our county planning staff, because after the LCP workshop, I asked them if they could kind of be the local workshop for cities who wanted to update their LCP, and maybe we could work together with the county and we could streamline that a little bit. And so we're kind of thinking about that. The same with the strategic plan, and I'm sure that you've all done the same thing, is we had a meeting with our plan. I had a meeting with our long-range planner, Steve Monowitz, and we talked about it. What are the things in the strategic plan that we can actually do, and what can we do locally that helps the state? So I think that's just the beginning. And again, it's driven by staff limitations. It's driven by lack of employees who we've all let go because we didn't have any planning fees to pay them. But maybe some of that will begin to come back as the economy kicks up a little bit, and we can look at it from another. Maybe we'll have an extra resource locally that we can reach out to the state staff.
Commissioner Zimmer.
Yeah, I really appreciate Commissioner McClure's comments about the methods of information dissemination, and because that, to me,
is really key. I'm always struck by the things that people have in common and that they don't know they have in common. I think one example would be the request that we had for tiered permitting in the Gaviota plan. I know we've looked at some version of tiered permitting for agriculture in other recent LCPs, I think, as close as San Luis Obispo County a few months ago when we did this grading thing. And so it's kind of a marvel to me that adjoining counties don't know what each other is doing with the Coastal Commission successfully to address their concerns. And what that brings me to, and likewise, sister agencies. I found the discussion yesterday about the equestrian facility fascinating because we had State Parks, which is a conservation agency in its own way, addressing us with their needs, but not speaking our language at all in their letter. They sent us a letter from a biologist that didn't address the question of whether this was Esha or not, and if not, why not? So I think there's a missing link here, and I'm wondering if there's any way we could seek out or encourage a private partner in the information dissemination business, because it's a lot easier to raise money to purchase land for conservation because then it's the Douglas Family Preserve or, you know, this person's mother's preserve or whatever that is, and that's what people need to have back. And it's a lot harder to market to an information technology magnet. You will have the honor of pulling together these disparate elements, but I'm wondering if there's any way to reach out for that, because we've got local governments saying we'd love to do it, we just don't have the time. Our planners don't even have the time to look on your website to read all the information that's already there. We have our staff not having the time or the research. So I don't know if there's any, I don't have any particular ends or skills in terms of putting together that kind of connection, but I want to put it out there as a wish.
Okay, and I think we are actually moving into the strategic plan discussion. We have one member of the public that would like to address us on this local government, and that's Jeremy Tittle. Thank you.
Jeremy Tittle from Santa Barbara County Supervisor Hall's office. Supervisor.
Can you speak right into the mic?
Okay, sorry about that. Jeremy Tittle from Supervisor Salute Carball's office in Santa Barbara County. And the supervisor asked me to just come and briefly thank the commission for your commitment to this effort and specifically recognize Dr. Lester's good work on this effort and his staff's good work. I think the report in following up on the workshop that my boss had participated in with you guys was excellent. And my boss was actually one of the co-founders of the Coastal Counties Caucus of CSAC that's worked on a range of issues, but largely working with the League of Cities on relationships with the Coastal Commission and working on a lot of these issues that we all work on jointly. And we've come a very long ways, I believe, in the last 5 to 6 years. And I think the 6 additional items that were identified in the report and following up are excellent next steps. That my boss definitely supports partnering with you guys on working to move forward, especially including, I know, the need for resources that we all experience, and anything we can do in that realm to advance that conversation and continue to work together on that, we definitely support. So thank you again for the commitment to this, and anything that, just speaking for one member of local government, anything we can do to help you guys and continue to partner, we really look forward to doing. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And Commissioner, are we ready to move on to the next item, the strategic plan? All right. Dr. Lester?
So the strategic plan has a brief PowerPoint presentation. This is our proposed final strategic plan for the Coastal Commission. You recall we had the public hearing in January about the draft strategic plan, and we heard public comment and had a discussion of that and got commission feedback. Since that time, we have done a couple of things. One is we did extend the comment period, which came up in January, So that was extended to February 22nd. So overall, the plan was available for about 60 days for public comment. And we think that was effective. We did receive 28 letters, and perhaps you've had a chance to look at those. Those are attached as an exhibit. As we explained in January about this, there is a strong need to have an updated strategic plan for the commission. It's been a long time, more than 15 years since we've had a strategic plan adopted. In addition, NOAA, which provides us a significant amount of funding, asked us to do a strategic plan under our federal grant. So this is also meeting a condition that they have put on us to be more strategic and think about how to allocate our limited resources more effectively. The final plan that we've presented today, the proposed final plan, we have taken into account what we heard at the January hearing, as well as public comments and other input that we've had since then. We've made a variety of changes in the plan, including amending and adding and deleting certain strategic actions to implement the goals that we previously identified. We have an expectation, depending on, again, how we discussed today, that we are going to provide periodic updates to the commission on implementation of the plan, and then our broad intention would be to bring an update to the plan back, perhaps beginning in 2017, the last year of this particular five-year plan. So we do want this to be an ongoing process and something that we can update periodically, and the federal government also expressed their concern that we have built that kind of update into this too. So we support that. As I mentioned, we did receive 28 letters of written public comment from various local governments, nonprofit organizations, and members of the public. All of those comments are included in Exhibit 1 of this staff report. Next slide, please. I'm just going to briefly remind you of the general structure of the plan and then get into some of the overarching changes and where we're headed with it. We did have seven goals. We do have seven goals in the plan. Those are maximize public access and recreation, protect coastal resources, address climate change, strengthen the LCP program, improve the regulatory process, enhance information management and e-government, and build agency capacity. Next slide, please. We also have sections in the plan that address our vision and our mission and our core values. This is the mission that's put up there. There was one change to this, which was to be clear that we also embrace the rigorous use of science in the pursuit of our mission, which is also specifically provided for in the Coastal Act. In response to some of the comments at the January meeting, we did update the document to provide statutory citations for the basis of some of the visionary statements. We took out a couple of the jargony words and tried to make that a little more focused, keyed towards the Coastal Act. I'm not going to go into these vision, mission, and core values in any more detail unless there's a question or a comment about that in a minute. Next slide, please. So one of the things that a number of you commented on and that we heard was just to talk a little bit more about how the plan is integrated. So I put this slide up here, and it may look complicated. I've tried to make it as simple as possible, but I do think we have an integrated plan, and I want to go through that just for a minute. We have the seven goals in the plan. This slide shows you at the top the four organizational goals, building agency capacity, the LCP program, regulatory program, and information management. And the oval on the bottom is generally Coastal Act implementation. And this integration point also speaks to some of the comments we heard about, you know, by identifying access or protection of coastal resources, what about these other Coastal Act policies that we also care about, like visual resources or cultural resources? We want to be clear that we're not saying that we're not going to be implementing and protecting resources that are required for us to protect under Chapter 3. What we're saying is that this entire plan is geared towards ultimately improving and effectively implementing the Coastal Act. That's the objective of the strategic plan, is for us to be able to effectively meet our statutory requirements. So all of the organizational goals that you see at the top feed into, and their purpose is to enable us to implement the Coastal Act. I'll come back to that in a minute. At the top, the four organizational goals have a lot of overlap and are mutually supportive and are going to work in a way that is integrated. first and foremost, and this is an implicit priority in the discussion, is agency capacity. Within agency capacity, the most important things in our mind are building our staff capacity, again, some of the funding issues and the resource issues that we've been talking about, and also dealing with the capacity of the staff itself, particularly succession planning. We're going to face a wave of retirements, a loss of seniority and expertise. We have a critical need to invest in staff training and professional development and bring up the young staff that we have and build that capacity, and assuming we get some more resources, make that staff capacity strong, because ultimately the effectiveness of our program goes to our capacity, organizational capacity. That capacity feeds directly into our ability to implement the LCP program, work with local governments, and implement our regulatory program. Those two programs are integrally related as well, and a lot of the strategic plan has to do with developing policy guidance. For example, when we develop sea level rise guidance to feed into the LCP updates, that's going to directly inform our regulatory decisions as well and provide us a basis for providing more clear guidance and structure for applicants. So there's an integration there across the actions within those two areas. Information management, of course, for me is a fundamental modernization effort that we need to keep pushing on. You heard some of it the other day on our mapping dimension. We're working on the information and permit monitoring and tracking systems. And so those improvements and all of the actions in that under that goal, to me, inform all of the other organizational goals and are going to lead to enhancements and improvements in each of those. So all of those organizational goals are integrated. They feed into implementation of the Coastal Act and support implementation of the Coastal Act. Down in that bottom oval in red are highlighted the three strategic policy objectives that are pulled out in this plan. Again, recognizing that we are going to continue to implement all of the Coastal Act, but we're placing specific and special strategic emphasis on public access, protecting coastal resources that are enumerated in that under that goal, and climate change. And so it's not that we're not going to implement the other policies, is that there are actions that place strategic emphasis in those three areas because we do think those are high priorities. So that's how we see the integration of the plan. The next slide, please, also gives you another take on the integration and some of the discussion about priorities. And you might consider these cross-cutting themes that you see in all of the goals. One is this need for increased funding and staff capacity. And as Commissioner Kinsey observed a minute ago, every goal area and actions has a need for increased funding. There is so much that we need to do, and there's a lot of funding that's needed. That's a cross-cutting theme. Enhanced policy guidance is also something you see in all the goals, where that's something that as an agency we need to build our capacity to do better, including communicating it. Enhancing coordination and collaboration is also a common theme that you'll see in there with all of our sister agencies and stakeholders and local government. And so, again, an emphasis on some of the process and organizational needs. But again, that relates to funding and staff capacity because policy coordination requires people to do it. And so, for example, if we want to improve our ability to work with MPAs and the OPC and the Ocean Science Trust, we're going to need more people to spend more time. We feel like we do a pretty good job of interagency coordination and are very sensitive to that, but you can't do it all the time and at full capacity unless you have that ability. So the last cross-cutting theme is modernizing the agency, and a lot of the actions go to just improving systems, mostly information systems, but figuring out how to do things more effectively and enhancing our digital capabilities and communication capabilities, modernizing the systems that enable us to do the work that we have to do every day. Next slide. So that's the overarching framing of how we see the plan working together, but you've already heard from Susan today a little bit about our budget, and in the plan we included this slide, which gives you our general fund budget from that chart that you have from Susan's report. This is just the general fund piece over time. The solid line underneath is that plotted over time since the beginning of our program, and you can see it has gone up from zero up to around $10 million to 2011, I think, is the last fiscal year date there. The dotted line is that number adjusted for inflation. And so when you look at our budget in today's dollars, you see that it's actually declined tremendously and is less than half of what it was in 1978, which gives you a feel for the kind of constraints and the changes in our capacity over time. And granted, the nature of our work has changed also, and so now we're much more involved in LCP planning. We have 60 certified LCP jurisdictions that we didn't have back in 1981 when we had many more original jurisdiction permits, but the nature of the work has changed, and it's complicated work, and it takes time to do it effectively. If you go to the next slide, this is just our total the total amount of funding that we've received, not just general fund. So this includes federal funds, most importantly, but also the reimbursements and the other categories that Susan talked about, which just shows you that there's a more dramatic change when you adjust it for change over time in today's dollars. Back in 1981, when we had a huge influx of federal grant money to do LCP planning, that we were up around $40 million in today's dollars. Now we're down at $15 million. So you see the contrast in our capacity overall. That's the year when we had 14 people in San Francisco doing statewide planning. Next slide. So let me turn to the public comments just briefly. I read through all of the public comments, and a number of us did, and personally I felt really good after reading those comments. There was a lot of really rich information in there and thoughtful time put into the comments, and I was really buoyed overall about the support for our program and the interest and engagement of the program. Even the comments that were, could be characterized as more critical or concerned about how you implement your decisions from time to time. But the general first category I have up there is that there was a lot of support for this plan, a lot of concern, also a lot of concern about setting priorities and our resources. So everybody, including yourselves in January, recognize that there's a lot here. We can't do all of it. We need to get some feel for how we're going to set those priorities. The second category of comments received might be called policy-related, so people identified specific policies that they thought we ought to be implementing or policy concerns, like you need to pay more attention to private property or you need to do planned retreat, and then some were very specific. You need to do integrated water resource management, spend more time with sand replenishment policies, et cetera. Those policy-related comments we've addressed to the extent we thought they were appropriate to put into this plan. I think many of them are going to be addressed indirectly through the actual exercises of developing policy guidance and responding to the Coastal Act requirements. So we didn't necessarily incorporate specific statements to do certain policies. This is not a policy document. It's a strategic plan. The next category, what might be called process-related comments, a lot of comments and concerns about us making sure that we're, again, communicating, collaborating, that we're not being redundant or conflicting with other agencies, not creating new mandates that are unnecessary, and also making sure that we're looking for opportunities for streamlining and that sort of thing. And so a lot of those comments we feel are addressed in the plan and many of the actions, and so we incorporated some of those where appropriate again. And then under the category of new actions, some of these were related to public comments. Some of them were just things that we generated based on your feedback and the overall thinking of the plan as it stood since January. These listed here are all of the new actions, and in the Appendix A, which is the summary chart of the actions, which I'll get to in a minute, these are all italicized. That's what the italics is. But we added some actions related to sand and beach management. Enforcement has been pulled up and highlighted as definitely a priority, and there are four new actions listed there. Marine protected areas in coordination with our ocean policy partners is addressed. Cultural resource protection and coordination, marine debris and climate change in the West Coast Governor's Agreement, the Select Committee on Coastal Protection, which has been formed since we talked in January, and we see that as now an action that we need to pay attention to and make sure that we're adequately participating in. And finally, staff training and professional development was really implied in the last version, but we didn't feel like it was appropriately highlighted as a distinct effort that we need to make to pull that together as a program action. Next slide, if there is one. Okay, so this is just a snapshot of the appendix, which I think is most directly addresses a lot of the concerns we had raised about how are we going to prioritize our work and get this plan done. This chart summarizes or lists each action here by goal and by objective. And then, as I said, the italicized ones are new. I don't, there isn't one here, but if they're in italics, that's a new action. We divided the five-year plan into three time periods: short-term, 1 to 2 years; midterm, 2 to 3; long-term, 4 to 5; and made an effort to identify when did we anticipate engaging in these particular actions. And then the last column is an indication of whether we think funding is needed to actually effectively do that action. And you, as Commissioner Kinsey said, a lot of these you can see need funding to do. I do want to explain that there are some nuances here that were difficult to convey in a chart like this, but in some cases we are going to be doing these things, like working with, if you look at the local government tasks and coordination on LCP updates, we're doing that. We're going to be doing that. We've been doing it. We're doing it now. We're going to continue doing it through the 5 years. The level at which we can do it is directly tied to how many staff we have to do it. So if we get a lot more investment in LCP planning staff, we'll be able to do that much more effectively. But it's not that we're not going to do it at all because there's a dollar sign there. It's that we're going to do it to the extent we can. Others are more clear, like this one here that is in this chart, do the vulnerability assessment for public access related to climate change. That's something that we put in the last section, and I don't see us doing that unless we get more people, because it's just not something that it's important, but we're not going to do it unless we have the resources, period. And then the dollar sign 1, 2, and 3, one was really meant to convey, well, we could maybe get away with, if we could squeeze a half PY somewhere or get a couple volunteer interns, maybe we can accomplish that. 3 is we need some serious money to do that work. 2 is generally we need at least a person to begin doing that work. So we presented it this way because we wanted to still maintain that all of the actions are important, but some of them are going to be happening sooner because we see them as relatively more important or that we have the ability to do them now. Some of them are going to happen later, if at all, depending on what happens with funding. So that's I'll stop there and I guess open it up for questions. We are really, we feel like we've gone very far with this version, and we feel like we're ready to move forward, and we hope that you agree and are able to endorse it today. We do have more time if there are concerns, but hopefully we can address those concerns now and move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I think before we go to the commission, we have a couple of public speakers that I'd like to hear from first. Jen Eckel and then Susan Jordan.
Thank you, Chair Schellenberger, members of the commission. I'm Jen Eckerly. I'm an ocean policy consultant with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And I just wanted to thank staff and members of the commission for the considerable effort that went into developing the strategic plan. Specifically, we appreciate the inclusion of Action 2.2.11 in the final plan, which acknowledges the need to develop guidance or other protocols to address protection and management of marine protected areas through the commission's programs and decisions. In addition to the inclusion of this action, we'd like to recommend that Section C under Action 4.2.3, which provides guidance for LCP updates, includes the evaluation of marine areas of special biological or economic significance in addition to evaluating ESHA. Development of guidance on how to address projects that might impact marine protected areas is critical to protecting the coast and ocean resources and to realizing the full potential of the network Californians have worked so hard to create. This guidance will help the Commission safeguard these areas and take them fully into account during your decision making. We encourage you to move forward in a timely manner to create these guidelines to ensure protection of the state's marine protected areas now into the future. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Susan Jordan, California Coastal Protection Network. I just want to thank the staff and the commission for taking such a thoughtful and deliberate approach to the revisions to the initial draft. I think this document is much improved. It helps us describe the stakeholders that care about the Coastal Commission and coastal protection in California. It really gives us a framework to communicate what the commission is actually doing. I also actually, now that you've gotten past this stage, and I don't know what changes you, the commissioners, you yourselves may want to make, if any, but I think the way I see things changing in terms of funding and in Sacramento is that you really do have a big opportunity right now, probably the first opportunity that you've had in years, to gather stronger support and funding for this program. It's never going to be easy, but I do think you have a real chance here. And I think the idea of prioritizing climate change is also another opportunity. That's one of the reasons that CCPN was asked by Senator Leno, who's head of the Budget Committee, so you couldn't get a better author, to sponsor SB 461, which will establish the Coastal Adaptation Fund. It's a start. We're looking at taking up to $15 million and distributing it to agencies, including the commission, that work on sea level rise and climate change. So I encourage you to build on this strategic plan, and I see you as the ambassadors to communicate this information to the legislature, and I look forward, and I think the level of support and comment letters that you received on this strategic plan is an indication of how many entities out there. I mean, there were some critical comments, but there's a lot of support for the commission out there, and we want to build on it now, so thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Zimmer.
Thank you. I, too, think that this version of the plan is very much improved. I think it's a very elegant document. I'm having a little difficulty because when I think about priorities, I think about a list with numbers, and this is a horizontal integrated presentation, which is a very good thing, but I'm still trying to figure out how some of these things fit. In terms of the short-term, mid-term, long-term, in the 5 years, I'm not sure how we identify a moment where we can consider that phase successfully completed is just a comment. But in terms of the top three priorities, public access, protection of coastal resources, and climate change, I was very interested in Ms. Jordan's letter because she identified two very big issues that relate directly to climate change, which are the definition of coastal dependent uses and the coastal dependent override that's currently in the Act, and how we deal with shoreline protective devices in light of erosion, sea level rise. So, and I've brought this up and other commissioners as well, numerous times over the last few months with all of these bluff top residences that are being expanded and so forth and rebuilt. So it seems to me that those issues are obstacles, if unresolved through additional short-term implementation of refinements of regulatory policy, those issues are obstacles to dealing with climate change. And so I'm wondering if there's a place in that you feel currently in your list here that addressing in a shorter time frame specifically how we address these nonconforming bluff structures, the nonconforming facilities that are subject to flooding and so forth.
Yeah, I think there are a couple places where that's going to happen. One is under the climate change guidance actions that we've identified, and those are sort of phased. Right now we're working on the sea level rise guidance, which should be coming forward this year, sooner than, not entire year, but mid-year, which will provide a framework for some of that kind of thinking about shoreline structures and what we do along eroding shorelines, hazardous areas. There's also a second action in, that we get more specific on that term, and we've applied for a grant to help us do that work, but I think we're going to be doing some of that work anyway. And also it's occurring I don't want to say indirectly, but it's occurring out of necessity through certain LCP planning that we're doing, such as in Solana Beach and other communities, where we are dealing with those questions. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I would say is that the Select Committee on Coastal Protection was established, and although we aren't sure exactly what that agenda is going to look like necessarily for discussion, it is going to be an opportunity to deal with larger policy questions, which I think you're raising, for example, the current Coastal Act policy for shoreline structures and existing development, and discussing issues around that. I think that would be the appropriate forum for that kind of discussion. And then similarly for the coastal dependent question you raised, some of that would happen under the equivalent policy guidance actions under Coastal Resources 2.2, as well as LCP planning, and potentially again through the Select Committee.
And I was also struck by Ms. Jordan's suggestion that perhaps we need not be fearful of some regulatory tweaks to assist the Commission in making these revisions. I think that the regulation, looking at our regulations, is pretty far down on the list in terms of priorities. So I'm not, you don't have to answer that now, but I'm just saying that I'm sharing that view, that maybe that should be incorporated with specifically with respect to the two issues that
I think that's a good point, and let me just address that briefly. Regulatory Programs 5.1, the update of the Code of Regulations, just so I'm clear what I'm hearing, its order in being number 5 is not a priority. It just happens to be under Goal 5. The priority we have there is to immediately begin assessing the feasibility of doing regulatory updates, and that's a time-intensive task. Yeah. So the first step is just to decide whether we have the legal capacity and the other policy support capacity to do something, and then move into identifying what those priorities would be. Because I'm assuming some of us are going to conclude we can do some of that, and mm-hmm. so, but maybe not all of it.
Okay. So. Well, I guess I'm to sum that up. I'm just suggesting that those two issues I've heard. One commissioner and a few others expressed that in terms of assessing whether we have the regulatory framework or not, that priority within the priority, if we're going to be addressing sea level rise, I'm suggesting that that be considered. And then I have a comment on 2.5.2, which is under the ag supporting agriculture, exploring streamlining. That looks like it's not going to come online until the midterm. Am I right about that? My iPad died, so I can't remember. Looking at the
right.
Explore options for expedited permit review for agriculture, and you have that in the midterm.
Years 2 to 3. Yeah. So I think we're thinking there on the early side of that second period, partly because we're, practically speaking, we're in year one right now. This is, okay. If we can adopt today, we'll be 4 months into our plan.
Okay.
Beginning to get into that in year two, potentially in relation to some of both the workshop discussion we're having and also some of the LCP updates that are pending.
Thank you.
Kinsey.
Thank you. I, too, think the plan is a strong document and a very good framework for our strategic activities and would support adopting it today. I think that, you know, clearly what you point out, Charles, is something that I think all of us recognize, and that is this agency capacity challenge. But the tough part for me when I look at this is that we have a strategic plan that is so dependent upon additional resources to be able to fulfill it, and we don't have any real mechanism to go and get those additional resources. I mean, we talk about getting to the legislature,
my view of federal and state government, in spite of rebounding economies, is they're shrinking, not growing, and there are other challenges that we would face to get that. So I think the key thing that I would suggest is that we need more partners. We need to, if I look at climate change or outreach or the collaboration on all these other studies that are being undertaken by our partner agencies, they all have dollar signs by them. So, I mean, virtually all of those areas do. And so I think we need to think of a way of stretching different partnerships, public-private partnerships, bringing in, obviously grants are one source, but in-kind support from others, even from, marketing or PR firms that believe in the coast. There's so much goodwill for the coast that we have to tap into that in a new way. And universities taking on some of those assessments on the science side, philanthropy, and delegation. Some of this stuff I think that we want to see, we may want to find other partners who pick it up, the whole thing, and take it on. So, I would be encouraging our chair and you to consider some kind of working group to brainstorm how, what other resources are out there, and then maybe we look for a way to go and make the case. And, in fact, I even think we need tools to make the case, something in the way of either a brief video or a good graphic documentation. When people see the coast, they definitely can support it. In terms of just a couple things for me personally, I'm appreciative of the fact that we recognize the affordability factor is important in access. And although it doesn't identify how we're going to reach those underserved communities, it does acknowledge that we want to. And I think that, along with affordability in the communities along the coast, is important. One on wind and solar, you talk about small scale. I'll just share with fellow commissioners, Marin County just walked away from all wind and solar, in our LCP update, because there is such a contentious debate going on, even within the greenest people on earth. And so I look forward to the Coastal Commission really establishing policy guidance that can be applied. We need help at the local level. Sometimes locals say, you say it the other way around. We need that. And when you say small scale, we need to define what small scale is. The prioritization is less apparent to me in this, although I did hear you talk about how by the staging of it, that is one illustration, whether it's near-term, mid-term, or long-term. I just would ask you one question, which is, on the ones that have multiple dollar signs, is it your sense that those will not even find their way into the work plan unless we find additional resources? Or how do you interpret that? Thank you.
I think it's not always the case that that would be the answer. If there's a $1 sign, let me back up. The 7.4 agency capacity increase program funding, you'll see that those are all starting now. And none of them need dollar signs. That's because I'm making that a personal objective of mine, and I'm going to be working with who I can in order to do the kinds of things you were talking about a minute ago, to find funding. That'll be the backdrop towards trying to pursue some of these tasks that need dollar signs. When there's a $1 sign, it may be more likely that we're able to find or squeeze out the resources somewhere, maybe by creatively using positions we have, or volunteers, or graduate student interns, whatever that might be, to accomplish them. That's how I see the $1 sign. $2 signs, we're really, taking a hard look at what we have and what might need to be done on that, and thinking you would need a person. You need to find a person, a PY, some way to do that. That doesn't mean that won't happen. It just means we're going to need to try to find that person. If we don't, then, yeah, at this point, I'd say we aren't doing it. Mm-hmm. And then $3 signs was, again, both we need people, but in some cases it just conveys if you want to really do it well, you're going to need a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the key thing for me then is just to say that I think that it's great that you're going to be on the trail, and that I think we could benefit from tapping into resources and ideas, even from fellow commissioners, to look for our partnerships outside of our direct relationships with the legislature. Thank you.
Commissioner Resnick.
Thank you. Number of comments and a couple questions. First of all, I too am ready to move ahead with this. I've done a lot of strategic plans in my life, and they can always be better, but there's a point to move on and get to actually implementing and evaluating. And so I wasn't sure to take if Commissioner Kinsey was actually a motion. If it was, I'd be happy to second, or if it just sort of comments at this point.
I was leaving that to others.
We don't have a motion on the table yet, and you've begun to speak, so there will be one soon, I'm sure. So continue with your comments. Well,
should I then just move this? Or
no, carry on.
Okay.
But we'll have a motion soon, I'm sure.
Excellent. Excellent. So one thing I did in looking at this plan again is I before I looked at it, I kind of wrote on a sheet of paper all the things that I wanted to include. Because when you look at a plan, you tend to look at what's there and not what might be missing. And usually I can almost always find something that was missing. I couldn't find anything that was really missing in here. And I think that's a testament to the hard work of staff and the feedback that the public has put on. So I think it's an excellent plan and one that's going to take a lot of work to implement. A few specific comments and questions. One, just related to the first woman who spoke from NRDC, is there any issue with putting in ASBS and MPA in 4.2.3? That was a good comment.
No, I think we can easily incorporate that. Okay. I don't know if it needs to be specifically enumerated here, but we can do it under that task.
I thought it made sense. A second point relates to just IT and communications, because this has come up a lot. And it is pervasive throughout the work plan. I think clearly, I mean, obviously there is a dedicated goal. I think it was number six, but there's other elements in various places. And I think most of them are front-loaded in this work plan, which is great. I would just encourage the more that can be done early on in communications and IT and data management and all that stuff. I know it's challenging because it takes resources to do that, but it's long-term, it's much more cost-effective to get that get things on the website and able to communicate. So I definitely concur with what Commissioners McClure and Kinsey and others have said on that. Third part is the resource, and I think this is probably the most challenging part, and you've had a lot of questions on this. You know, one thing that I would encourage is just a chart of what the $1, $2, $3 mean, because maybe I missed it, I didn't see it, so I was confused at that. But one thing I thought might be valuable, again, not to slow up this plan, but more as an implementation as you're going through, is maybe it's two columns. Maybe it's what resources do we have within our existing budget? Because I think you're kind of conflating that with the $1, $2, $3. Like, what do you have in your existing budget? And then what is needed to implement? And where I think that would be helpful is, as you go out raising funds, I think it would be helpful to see that column of, oh, we need more money to do the climate adaptation, and then you've got a very specific, hey, we can find the partners or go to the legislature. So I think maybe breaking that into two columns would be good. And the third question I had on resources, I mean, this is sort of an obvious question, but I noticed, I didn't count the shaded boxes, but I noticed a lot in the near term, in the first column, the farthest left. And again, this is always challenging. I've done a million plans. You want to front load as much as possible so that you give yourself some leeway if things, drag out. But you also want to be realistic, and in looking at that, I assume that's something you guys took into account of front-loading, that you think this can be done with so many shaded boxes in the left column. I don't know if you want to answer that.
I looked at that one pretty hard.
Yeah.
I'm still a little concerned that there's too much front-loading, but we did talk, the executive management team discussed these, and so we're going to do our best to bring all those forward. And okay. Some of them are qualified by dollar signs. So as Commissioner Kinsey pointed out, if we don't get funding, they won't be done.
And that's where maybe having that second column of the funds needed would be helpful. And then the last part I wanted to make, and this goes to another comment that was made, and I can't remember which commissioner made it now, I apologize, but regarding evaluation of the plan, a lot of these objectives I think are fairly clear if it is adoption of a guidance document or development of a website, and it's supposed to be done in the first 2 years. You kind of know if you do it. Other objectives are more, work with, explore. they're a little squishier, and I think it's a little harder to evaluate. And so, again, not necessarily in the plan because I don't want to slow it up, but if the management team has sort of a maybe more specific metrics that you can actually look back and on some of those squishier ones and go, yeah, we've met it or we haven't met, I think that would be helpful moving forward. Mm-hmm. That was it for me. Thanks.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission approve the final 2013-2018 strategic plan and authorize the Executive Director to submit the final strategic plan to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration by June 30th, 2013.
Moved by Commissioner Brennan, seconded by Commissioner Zimmer. Would you like to speak to your motion?
Only briefly, it's all been said by a number of the commissioners. I do think this is a huge task, but breaking it down the way you have, I think it can get your arms around it in pieces. I think the commissioners have added a lot of things. The only thing I'd want to say is I think everybody's starting to talk about coastal resilience. Everybody wants the Coastal Commission to be on their committee, and can you come to our meeting and come to our seminar, and can you work with our working group? And I keep telling them there's just no capacity to do that. But I think those groups can go ahead, and maybe there's an opportunity where there's a check-in time. Maybe it's some, as they move down the road on this, that the commission staff can weigh in and start giving them a little direction, and or say, hey, you maybe want to go look at this again, and then maybe they go away for 6 or 8 months and come back. I think that's about how, if we're lucky, that would be the best we could do, and I think that's pretty good, because I think a lot of the groups do understand the Coastal Act in a lot of ways. But the coastal resilience movement's getting huge momentum, and the Nature Conservancy studying all of Ventura County, six places in the world that they're studying, and Supervisor Carbajal is having a seminar and kind of a workshop on June 21st on coastal resilience for Santa Barbara County. So these things are all there, and I know they expect the commission to be there, and I try to soften everyone. When they talk to me, I try to tell them exactly that situation, but I think that if we could do what I just said, I think that would be a huge step forward. So at least be able to weigh in from time to time and give them honest expectations of what your role could be, which, like I said, could be a check-in and milestone points. Thank you.
Commissioner Zimmer, to your second.
No, thank you.
Commissioner Wickett.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. So just a few comments here. One, I think it's just fantastic that we will have a five-year plan because it's something that everyone can rally around. You know, I don't have specific comments on this plan. I think Commissioner Resnick, you know, touched on it, that there are some areas where if you ask so what, you know, it could be a little bit more defined and a little more specific. So as you finalize it, if you can maybe tweak that a little bit. I thought the agriculture section could be, have some more bullets or be more specific and more detailed in that area. But listen, the main thing, especially as Commissioner Brennan just pointed out, in a world of coastal, as people are liking the Coastal Commission more, I would like to think, and resilience is one of the action words. And as someone who, on all my nonprofit boards, I always, for some reason, even though I never want to, end up on the development committee, I view this as something that, you know, the whole state can get around. And obviously, and this will take offline, you know, you can raise money through public means I think Susan Jordan and Commissioner Kinsey kind of bookended the optimism and the pragmatism of that, but I think there's opportunities there. And then there's a whole host of opportunities, I think, in the private sector. You know, it's not like the PUC or even Cal Fire or Fish and Game can go out and raise money for those organizations. State Parks maybe is the poster child that has tried to do this to some extent, but there's a whole world here that I think we've never touched upon at the Coastal Commission that, you know, we could do. And, you know, we have, the whale tail license plates. And, you know, why doesn't everyone have those license plates? Or why aren't there higher orders of those license plates? Or, I mean, there's a way to get the public involved. You know, we sit here meeting after meeting, and it's very uplifting to hear people talk about our good work and appreciate it, but there's a way to get them involved in a five-year plan without political lobbying, but just supporting the commission. that I think we should think about and start studying and focus on. So I will be supporting the motion by Commissioner Brennan enthusiastically and looking at this as a starting place, not an ending place, as a starting place to drill in, because really what it's all about and everything in government, it's about money and funding and getting more staff to do all the great things that are outlined in this plan, and I'm excited to get behind that. So thank you again for the good work.
Thank you. Commissioner McClure.
Yes, I want to thank staff for bringing this, bringing it forward and getting the word out and extending the comment period. But I would point out that of the 28 comments that we received, there were only a handful of local government entities, and there was only a handful of counties that responded, and of 58 counties, it might have been three, maybe four, and they happen to be counties that are connected to this commission because of commissioners. So again, I want to reiterate that somehow we have to connect the disconnect that we have with local government bodies, be it cities. And I was just going to Google how many incorporated cities are in California, because that would have told me a little bit. How many?
458.
458 counties. And again, we had cities.
59.
Sorry, cities. And we only had 28 comments. So, because I really believe that our LCPs are the link to assisting communities in doing the right kind of development. So it's just, it's not anything against staff. It's just that rhetorical question of how can we improve our communication process, and how can we improve the two-way conversation that happens between a local government and the commission. Because I believe that the more we improve that level of communication, the more the Coastal Act will be appreciated by the coastal communities. That's it. Thanks.
Commissioner Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, only briefly. I just want to say my city did send back some comments, and I intentionally didn't ask them to or even say, hey, by the way, I wanted to see if they would and how it came to them. So they got it through both the APA, and they got it through the League of Cities Coastal Group that had said, hey, you might want to plug in. And I think, you know, not just because I was commissioner, but I've been trying to coax them down the road. And so I think that they are starting to get there. But others, I think, might not be quite as feeling that comfortable. But I do want to say that they did it on their own, and I know the County of Santa Barbara did it on their own. County of Ventura planning staff, independent of Kathy Long, Supervisor Long's office. So I think the word got out, and the ones that were involved in the workshop felt the ownership of the workshop, and I think wanted to give it back to us. And I think aside from that, I mean, somebody sees it and just moves it into, you know, moves around the office, and people check off the box they read it, but nobody takes the time to do something about it. So just wanted to put that in there. Record. Thank you.
Any unwillingness to vote? Any unwillingness for a unanimous yes vote? Seeing none, the commission unanimously approves the strategic plan, and I think the commission has now done the first significant step toward freeing up resources. Staff can now submit this, and all that fabulous staff time that's gone into this document can now be moved on toward implementation. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're looking forward to implementing it.
And I believe that's it for the day. I have no public comments. Is that right, Vanessa? All right. Well, again, I'd like to thank Commissioner Zimmer for inviting us to this fabulous spot, and for Mother Nature for just fabulous weather. And we will see you all next month and we'll see you all next month in Marin. Thank you.
Thank you.